Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sunday show. I'm Gwen Berry, and this is Hear Me Monsters. Today we have our regular panelists, Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson, with author Ronald Feynman, and always Stuart Alexander, a past candidate for presidency, too. And gentlemen, let me start out by saying please apologize for the lateness of getting on. I had trouble with my computer booting up after we've had some storms down here. And for some reason, our electric today has been on and off. So thank you for being very patient with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, as they say, better late than never.
I know what Florida is like with the, as far as the rain and the wind and the electric uncertainty.
Yep. Well, thanks for the invitation.
You're very welcome, and it's good to have you both aboard today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me also. Yeah.
Yep, well, very much so.
Today we're going to talk about what everybody else is talking about, I'm thinking, and that's the election. I do have a clip to run that I think is at the heart of the Democrat puzzle that we're all...
Democratic puzzle?
The Democrat puzzle.
Democratic puzzle.
Well, I'm just talking about the Democrats running, so...
Okay.
I'm not talking about the Republicans in this instance. I think that it's important to take note that, throughout history in patriarchal society, man, it's politic and leadership in any form of fairness out there. It always has been, and it always continues to be, a quid pro quo cooperation in spite of opposition, and that's for mutual benefit. I mean, that's how the fairness comes about, and that's under thousands of years of patriarchal rule, and that includes us in the moment right now. But things are changing, and I'm looking for this clip, and it's on my page, and I'm getting to it now. Remember, I had to boot up late. and I think it's a really, really good, important piece to listen to because I think it says a lot. And I'm going to, as soon as I get it up, okay, let me play this. It's Rachel Maddow, okay? So let me play this clip.
Chris and Bernie. Between Senator Sanders and Chris Matthews, there was a very contentious back and forth and some very blunt remarks. And like I said earlier, I think some of this stuff is going to stick. Watch.
You and I look at the world differently. You look at it inside the Beltway. I'm not an inside the Beltway
guy. But
I am an outside the Beltway.
But the people that vote on taxes are inside the Beltway.
And those people are going to vote the right way when millions of people demand that they vote the right way. On this issue, I have no doubt that as president of the United States, I can rally young people and their parents to say that if Germany does it, Scandinavia does it, countries around the world do it, we can do it. And yes, we bailed out.
Can you bring,
it is your time to help the middle class.
The next Senate leader, a Democratic leader, is probably Chuck Schumer of New York. Can you deliver his vote tonight? Can you tell me one senator is going to follow you for these proposals? They're all good, decent proposals. In fact, they're moral proposals.
Chuck,
tell me the votes.
Yeah,
who's
I know
going to vote
very,
you?
Very well.
Is he going to vote with you?
Well, call him up. I don't know.
Well, if you give us one vote, you say I will give you 60 votes and pass it, and you can't give me one vote.
I didn't say
your vote, but you won't be in the Senate anymore.
Chris, I didn't say I'm going to give you one vote. Look, what you're not catching on, I have to say this respectfully. All right? You're a nice guy. You're missing the point. All right? You're missing the point. If you look at politics today as a zero-sum total,
right?
If you're looking at 63% of the American people not voting, 80% of young people not voting, billionaires buying elections,
right.
You're right. I'm not looking at that world.
How's that going to change the day you're in office? You won't have a Supreme Court on your side.
What
are
I
you?
Will have
you
is millions of people
you
demanding.
You need 60 votes to get a Supreme Court nominee. Well, no, we're starting at the very point of can you do what you say you're going to do?
Yeah, damn right, I can
do
what
I say. How
are
you
going to
do it? What
have
you done?
I get elected.
Have you ever done it? Have you ever gotten 60 votes? Have you ever gotten 60 votes for anything in the Senate?
Yeah, actually, we have.
Which one was it?
My veterans bill, okay. Comprehensive veterans bill, okay. The strongest veterans bill passed in many, many years. But that's as a senator. Now I am hopefully the president of the United States, and we have the bully puppet. So the difference that you and I have.
So is Obama.
The difference that you and I have is you're looking at politics in the way it is today.
Yeah.
What I am trying to do is not just pass legislation. I'm trying to change the face of American politics.
Is absolutely the crux of the matter. That was such a good exchange. Bernie Sanders saying, you and I look at the world differently. You look at it inside the Beltway. I'm not an inside the Beltway guy. I'm an outside the Beltway guy. He said, you look at politics today as a zero-sum total. Chris coming back and saying, listen, how is that going to change the day you're in office? I'm starting at the very point of can you do what you say you're going to do? Senator Sanders says, damn right I can do what I say. You're looking at politics in the way it is today. What I'm trying to do is not just pass legislation. I'm trying to change the face of American politics. I'm trying to change the face of American politics. That is the essence of what Bernie Sanders is trying to do in his campaign, absolutely, in his own words. And he didn't volunteer it. It had to happen through that contentious back and forth between the two of them, with Chris pushing him so hard on it, but he got it. And if you are a supporter of Bernie Sanders, that is absolutely music to your ears. And if you are skeptical that he can change the face of American politics, then you may like him, but you may think he can't get it done. And that is the fight that's happening right now in this fascinating Democratic primary, which is nothing like the Republican primary. Because in the Democratic primary, Democratic voters basically like both their choices. They like both candidates. They say they have respect for both candidates. They have a difference of opinion between them as to whether or not one of them is practical or one of them is asking too much. Between Chris and Bernie.
Okay, that was what I wanted to play, guys. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to get that out. And I think that at the end there, what Rachel Maddow had to say about what is at focus here with people who seriously are looking at this and who care about voting and who's running the country and the Democrat Party within the Democrat, under the Democrat umbrella. And that's where we are at, gentlemen. I mean, we're under the Democrat umbrella. That's the platform that Senator Sanders is on, too. And I think she really makes a very good point. And, of course, the conversation between Chris Matthews and Senator Sanders brings it to a head. And that's what I wanted to open with. Anyway, thank you for letting me get that out.
Well, very good, Gwen. I think that was definitely a pertinent message, something that we should all at least consider whether we sign on to it or not. It was definitely great. We, as a nation, have to get past this obstructionist kind of mentality. As Bush so wisely put it, if you're against us, or if you're not with us, then you're against us, as hickified as he could. And that's just not going to wash in this present-day country and the political atmosphere that we have today.
We've
got to get past that.
You know, Wayne, one of our guests tonight has actually ran a campaign for the presidency. Stuart.
Right.
I'd love to ask you, what do you think? I mean, you're not part of the Democrat Party, but you're also a voter, and you're out there right now making choices and seeing the discussion go on and the vitriol and the really crack down the middle that's happening with a lot of progressives and all of this. And I'm wondering, how do you see that? Well, how did that hit you?
Well, you know, when I see the messaging that is coming from Bernie Sanders and I see what is coming from the Hillary camp, you know, I have to ask myself, and I ask anyone listening to both sides, what is Bernie Sanders saying different from Hillary Clinton? Basically, they're on the same side as students. They're on the same side as many millions of our aging seniors. You know, they're for the veterans. therefore, you know, having more tightening up restrictions and regulations on Wall Street. Bernie Sanders is saying the same thing. Bernie Sanders is talking about the war on terror. You have Hillary Clinton saying the same thing about the war on terror. When you look at their voting records in the Senate, it's been very similar. So when I look at Bernie Sanders, I have to say, what make him any different from Hillary Clinton? You know, I would like to see Bernie Sanders, when I look at him as a candidate, I would like to see him as a truly left candidate. I really can't identify Bernie Sanders as a left candidate. You know, he falls too much into the mix. Now, I know right from the get-go that millions of people are supporting Bernie Sanders because, you know, he has a very populist message that he's taken to millions of Americans. People essentially, I know you say you don't want to talk about the Republicans in this segment here, but this is a revolt. This is a revolt. People are saying they're really sick and tired of the Democrats and the Republicans, and hear Bernie Sanders say, you know, I'm different from those guys. I'm a socialist, and that's what people are hearing, is that he's saying I'm a socialist. And when you look at the millennials, basically, it is a quickly growing segment of Americans that are saying, we are fed up with capitalism. It has not worked for us. I cannot afford my student debts that I have. I graduate from college. I can't get a job. And Bernie Sanders, he is identifying with that segment. I think when you look at Hillary Clinton, people say, well, she's part of the establishment. Bernie Sanders, just by the mere fact that he's calling himself a socialist, people, when I identify myself as a socialist, right away they say, well, you're a socialist, you know. They don't look at Democrat, Republican, libertarian. They don't look at anything other than I use that word socialist. So Bernie Sanders has separated himself away from the pack just by saying that he's a socialist. But when I look at his politics, I have to ask myself, how is Bernie Sanders any different from Hillary? And I really can't see the difference.
Well, here's the deal. I think there's a huge difference because he is asking for a political dynamic revolution here.
Isn't Hillary asking for the same thing?
No. No.
She's asking for the same thing.
I disagree there. I don't think she is. I think she's saying that she will.
Oh, she wants it, but she won't get it.
Right.
She wants it,
and she's advocating it. But, you know, when you look at her track record doesn't say that is genuine. But she's asking for it.
Stuart, gentlemen, fair time here. Wait a minute. What I hear is Secretary Clinton putting on the table most of the same issues, and yet talking about solutions within the system we have in place. There's the difference. Now, and also I would bring this up too. We have a candidate on one side who's running on the Democrat, and that was what I was preferencing with too. You know, Bernie, I think you have a point, Stuart. Perhaps he should have embrace the complete left and run on a socialist or socialist democrat socialist party ticket as an independent. But we know that those parties do not have the hierarchy or the organizational needed to run a candidate in this country right now. We're huge. We have a population. It's like always using all of the states and nations of Europe to reflect the reality of their tax system and how they apply it to schooling and healthcare, and what a wonderful system it is. And it works for them. But I would ask him to actually take a country, a nation the size of America, and compare it more evenly with that, like, say, India, where only 4% of medical coverage comes to the individual, because that's the way it goes over there. When you're talking about the huge organizational structures that we have right now, when you're talking about a revolution, as Bernie is, of bringing a revolution to the situation, to this campaign, and saying we can change it, you have to look at you're talking about the millennials, and in that group of people, and it's also Mr. Or Senator Sanders has the votes and the confidence of people between the ages of 18 and 45. It's not just millennials here that we're talking about. Overwhelmingly, most of the people involved in his campaign and who are there for him at the various the rallies and stuff, which he's done, he's really exploded and brought so many people in, they are predominantly white. That's just where it's at there. It's predominantly white, which is a little bit, that's not very much Democrat if you're going to structure it that way, if you're going to put it under this umbrella. I don't mean to confine this either. I know that Jack is an active progressive and that he's worked within campaigns for I don't know how many years, how long. But he has a grasp on it too. Jack, bring it. What was your opinion of what?
Well, Bernie Sanders is calling for national single payer health care, and that's a big reason that I like him. He's not glued to insurance companies the way Hillary Clinton and the rest of them are. They pay lip service to it, but he wants to branch off and he wants single payer. I'm all for it. We've been dominated by corporations way too long in this country, and it's about time we started kicking them back in the ass, which is exactly what they deserve. They've screwed the public. All they're doing is making the wealthy wealthier at our expense, and that shit should end right away. So at any rate, that's the biggest reason I like him so much. And
Do you like his solution compared to Hillary's solution, which she is angling for the same thing, but she's doing it on the back of the Affordable Health Care Act. She wants to continue from there.
In my mind, it remains to be seen whether that would be a successful venture or not. I don't know. I'm not skeptical. I'm not for it. I'm not against it. I just don't know that that's the way that we should be going. I just really don't know what to tell you. You know, Bernie Sanders' appeal is that he's straightforward. He's definitely for something, and he's not beating around the bush on health care. So she's trying to be coy with it, maybe. I don't know if she is or not, but it looks like she's trying to be coy. And you know what? We've had too much coyness. I'm tired of that shit.
Ronald.
Yes.
How do you see it? What do you think of what Rachel Maddow had to say about this contest and the conclusion that she drew?
I think her conclusion makes a lot of sense as I listen to it, but actually I really do not see any chance in the world for Bernie Sanders to be the nominee at the end. So I think it's impractical to think that he's going to be able to get enough delegates in the system we have and become the nominee. So I just think Hillary is going to be the nominee as it turns out at the end.
Well, the establishment Democrats have already assured that with their crazy superdelegate nonsense. They've made it a less Democratic party by doing that. But that's,
well, I mean,
they want to keep
the
outsiders out. They want to keep the usurpers out. They want the same old blue dog bullshit is what they want.
Well, excuse me. Can I just interject one thing here? I did my homework on this. I mean, I've been doing it right along. And I really haven't had the energy to get up to it for quite a few weeks right now, and it's the first time I've had the opportunity to even voice myself. But in support amongst, after over 20 years of working in the Congress on one side of the street or the other, either in the Congress or the Senate, Senator Sanders has right now 8 Congress people supporting him nationally.
Right.
I mean, on a national level, he has 8 Congress people supporting him. He has 1 senator, And he has one iffy superdelegate who keeps jumping the fence back and forth on it. But I think it's notable that there's one superdelegate. That's in 20 years of working with him. And I don't think for a moment that all of those Democrats in the House and all of those Democrats in the Senate are big pals. All of them are good friends with Hillary Clinton. But I do find it notable that Senator Sanders has only gotten that much support. And doing some homework on it, looking up old news articles from even when he was mayor in
Burlington, Vermont.
When he was in Burlington and he was mayor, and then taking a look at some of the stuff that has come, you know, down the pike since then, it's that Senator Sanders is a very much a my way or the highway kind of guy. He likes to have his point driven home. He's very passionate about what he stands for, but apparently not so easy to work with. There's not a quid pro quo. There's a cooperation factor that just isn't there. And this is one of the main reasons that he has so little support from the Senate and Congress. And I don't think it's because he has such high ideals or pie in the sky. I think that morally, the compass, as far as I'm concerned, he has a very good point. He's talking about the issues we need to be looking at. No argument for me there. Solution-wise, working with people, getting out and being able, is he able to accomplish that? Well, one of the reasons that I myself am supporting Secretary
Hillary.
Yeah, is because she does have so much support, and she has solutions, and all of the politics speak back and forth in debates and all of this. You're not hearing all of the policy and the wonk.
One thing I want to ask you: you say that, you know, you're supporting Hillary Clinton, but when I look at Hillary Clinton, just like I look at Bernie Sanders, I mean, presently the country has a $19 trillion debt. I mean, that's how much debt that we're in.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can't keep, because this is going to fall on generations of our children in the future. Like, what are you going to do to control this debt?
Hillary Clinton
is pursuing the same agenda that Bernie Sanders is only talking about, because I believe she has more of an ability to do something about her agenda as opposed to Bernie Sanders. He can talk about it, because at the end of the day, I don't believe he's going to win the nomination of his party.
When I talk
about debt, we have to consider debt, because just like whether you're, you know, just a citizen living in a house or a state or even a government, I mean, debt plays a very fundamental role in regards to what you're going to get accomplished. Now, I'm saying about debt because we can talk about what we want to do about students and making certain that education is affordable, you know, that housing is affordable, what you want to do with your veterans. You can talk about all this, but Bernie Sanders is talking about an $18 trillion budget. You know, obviously, when we look at over the next 10 years, we're talking about some serious money here. And just like Hillary Clinton and also Bernie Sanders, they're not talking about, I am concerned about the budget. What are going to be their priorities? And that's
we've got
where,
to tax the rich, period.
Yeah.
We can't
I mean, instead of
keep
giving money to the rich, they want to steal with the bailouts.
Let's talk in terms of what's possible within the organizational structure that we have in this country at this moment. And basically, one of the big deadfalls we've been dealing with for so long now has been the inability of Congress to work with the White House and to get things accomplished, let alone the debts. It's been a huge portion of not getting solutions on the table or solutions found.
Stonewalling against Obama is causing that.
Well, and here's another point. Another point I would like to bring out, another reason why I do support Ms. Clinton, is because she is trying to bring in a sweep with this election of new people in the House, Democrats, and new people in the Senate, Democrats.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know.
Well, the Senate,
I mean, that
the
is
Senate could
in
be
the
captured.
Sky.
The Senate could be
may
captured.
May I interject that I think the Senate is going to go Democratic. With 24 Republican seats and only three Democratic seats, there's bound to be a gain to a majority. They only need four seats if they win the White House and five seats if they don't win the White House. And I think the Senate will be gained, and in the House there'll be a gain. It won't be a majority, but there'll be a gain. But I think there will be a Senate majority of Democrats after this election.
But I'm saying whether it's Democrat or Republican, that's not the solution to our problems as working people. I mean, whether it's a Democrat, a majority of the Republicans, or the Republicans, or a majority of Democrats, that's not at issue here. The issue is we need to have change. Like, that's the reason why we're talking about Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
And if we're talking about change, I don't see it on either side of the aisle, with the Democrats or the Republicans. So if you're talking about making a sweep, or if you're talking about – we need to be talking about sweeping out. We need to get rid of all of those guys.
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Only one third of the Senate
because,
swept only one third of the Senate comes up any even year. That's one of the problems, too.
Say that again.
I'm sorry, Professor, would you repeat that, please?
I said that only one third of the Senate can be, in theory, even cleaned out, as we say, any 2 years, because the Senate term is 6 years, and only one third of the Senate comes up any even year. So only 34 senators are coming up, not 100. The House
it's a long-term
comes up easily, but the Senate's only one third.
Long-term process.
I do think that in my state here, and the professor's state, I do think Rubio's seat is going to go to Alan Grayson. I hope so.
Hey, you know, I want to ask the professor a question, because I've been a longtime advocate of term limits, even for the Senate. You know, I believe, you know, having 6 years, you know, if we talk about progressive change, and I know in Washington they're not talking about anything about progressive change. You know, these lifetime, you know, opportunities for the justices. You have senators where they get in there in their lifetime, but they're, you know, the door, you know, it's a revolving door every 6 years, and then they're back again. But, Professor, I mean, in your opinion, I mean, should there be some type of term limits, a limitation? I should, because it's already term limits, not term limits, but should it be a limit from 6 years to 2 years for, or even 4 years for senators?
Well, that would
require a constitutional amendment.
Right,
I understand that.
Constitution. And that requires a two-thirds
Which
vote
be almost
of each
impossible.
House, then 38 state legislatures to agree, and the chances of that are less
that
than zero.
Well, nothing on the planet is less than zero, but, you know,
well,
it's slim to none. Right.
Yes. None, not slim.
I've had a lot of math.
Wait, they can't get any amendments. It's only been 27 in our whole history. It's extremely hard to do that. And it's not going to happen. Now, they were able to get it for the presidency in 1947. The Republicans did that after Franklin Roosevelt's death to prevent a future president having more than two terms. But that's the presidency. But for Congress, for them to actually pass a bill or to pass an amendment that limits their own time, they're not going to do it.
My question was, in your opinion, should there be a limitation where it's not 6 years? I know it's almost impossible, not impossible, but almost impossible. But I'm talking about the, you know, right now, what one of the things that is holding this nation in the mud where we can't move forward is you have justices that are in there for a life term. You have senators in there for 6 years. I mean, but the thing is, it's almost impossible to get out of the gridlock because you have these people in there for lifetimes. Do you think it would be better if the term was limited to 2 or 4 years for senators and not the lifetime terms for justices, in your opinion?
Well, it would be better in theory, but then the question is, how do the senators get elected
theory.
Over?
I'm only talking
period?
About theory.
They got elected in presidential years or in off year, you know, the midterm elections, because that affects Senate seats also. I think better would be to have a limit on age, but I don't know if it can be done, to have senators not be there past, let's say, 80 at the latest. John McCain's running again. He's 80. Dianne Feinstein won her last
oh,
seat.
She's
past 80, and the justices are past 80. I think an age limit would be more practical than actual term limits.
Wouldn't that be discrimination? I mean, I sell automobiles for a living. What if they say you can't sell cars past 60? I'd be in trouble.
That's true, but we're talking about 80. We're not talking about 60
well,
or 70.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about 90? You know, what if they live to be 90?
And then I could give the example of Justice John Paul Stevens, retired at 90, thinking he should. Now he's 96 and he plays tennis every day.
My mother is 92 years old. My mother is 92 years old, and she say, I like working. She's 92.
Well, work part time, but not the full time work is what we're talking about. Like on the Supreme Court of the Senate. That's what
okay,
I'm saying.
Hey guys, hold it. Time out. Let me interject here. You have age limits of being able to run for an office.
Wayne.
Yeah, I think we have Gwen.
Go ahead, Gwen.
I'm going to start using my plug in mic again because that'll pow it all out.
Okay, by all means.
Listen, I mean, you know why? This is why I prefer the indigenous, tribal, and village community template. I mean, I really do, above it all. But the points are being made, and everybody should have a say. And, of course, our surrogate mentor who sponsors the show is in the chat room, and David has a few things he'd like to say, like, we just can't face another economic collapse like 2008. And he's strongly suggesting that stopping the wars and creating a huge WPA-type program for rebuilding this country and its infrastructure. And that's something that's on the secretary's slate. I haven't seen except a small model.
And on Bernie's.
Sanders. Well, it's not as structured, but it is there. You're correct. Yes,
it's there.
And it's mostly invested in green technology and putting that together and putting it up in this country. But I wanted to get David's thoughts in there. They're usually really great ideas. And
yep.
also Wayne, I'm sorry, I stepped in. Please.
That's all right. That's quite all right.
Getting a gavel here, guys. Go ahead, Wayne.
Oh, okay. Getting back. Yeah, no. What I wanted to say was that we were talking about an age requirement of limits. Well, number one, you already have it for someone to be able to run for an office.
Right.
Like presidency, you have to be like 36. Congressman is what, somewhere in the late
25.
35.
35 for the presidency, 30 for the Senate, and 25 for the House of Representatives.
There you go. And so, you know, let's take the inverse of that. And that's really not that much of a stretch to say, you know, after a certain point, pretty much everybody's kind of got a little senility going on at 80 or something like that. Not everybody.
Well, John Paul Stevens didn't and doesn't.
But it is something that maybe one should take into consideration. I mean, Reagan, we already knew, was suffering from Alzheimer's before his first term was up, and he got elected again.
Yeah, that was real clear there. You couldn't miss that one.
Yeah, may I butt in to suggest that I am concerned that our candidates are all, except for Ted Cruz and John Kasich's nearest, senior citizens, and you know Bernie's going to be 75, and Trump's going to be 70 this year, and Hillary's going to be 69, and I am concerned that there could be a health issue with people, you know, that age group having that kind of stress for the next 4 to 8 years. There's nothing we can do about it, but it is, I think, something to worry about, since we've never had a president pass 70 except Reagan and for just a few months Eisenhower, and now we're going to have two senior citizens likely against each other, and I'm one, but I don't think necessarily it's the best thing to have two senior citizens competing against each other with the stressful situations that exist in this country and in the world scene.
You know, the thing I'm looking at here, because I don't think really the age is the issue, but when you look at millennials and you look at the two parties, the Democratic Party, which has been around for over 200 years, you have the Republicans, who have been around for over 150 years, but you have these parties, it's like a good old boys club, you know? And when you look at millennials, I think most of millennials are leaning toward, you know, progressive politics. And
yeah.
you don't have progressive politics with people that have been around in the House and the Senate and on Capitol Hill for 30, 40, 50 years. You know, they don't even really represent the millennials. We can see that in this campaign. That's why
they
millennials now are flocking toward Bernie Sanders. So, you know, we really need a progressive movement. And,
yes.
and unfortunately, neither party really can address the needs of millennials today. You can see, even when you look at jobs for young people, when you look at education for young people, when you look at for housing, opportunities for young people, I don't think Bernie Sanders, I give it to him, he is addressing those issues. I don't think if Bernie Sanders, if he was not in this election, I don't even think those issues would really be seriously even addressed in this election.
Good point.
You know,
and they're very valid issues.
That's what we are lacking in this, is that the young people, the younger generation, the millennials, we have not tapped into that. And I don't think either party is adequate where they can deal with that. So one of the things when I look at Bernie Sanders, which I would, even though I don't, Gwen, I don't support Bernie Sanders, but if he was talking about, you know, he has already declared that he will not run an independent campaign. If he would have just come out and just said that he would be willing to run an independent campaign of one of the mainstream corporate parties, got my attention right there alone. But he is saying, you know, I am not going to run against the status quo.
However, can I interject to say, if he was to run as a third-party candidate, that would elect the Republicans to the White House, which would be, I think, a disaster.
Absolutely. It's just like Ralph Nader, when he was asked that, please don't go against the policies that we have in common, because when you do, and this is what happened in Florida, had he not run in Florida, we would not have had W. Bush, and this country would not have had the financial devastation that they have, especially me, suffered through.
Professor, let me ask you, how do you find the politics of the Democrats and Republicans so dissimilar? When you look at Bush, President Bush, it was a very smooth transition from Bush to Obama. Even though all the promises about closing Guantanamo, all the promises about bringing our troops home, the president, when he was running as a candidate in 2007 and 2008, he said, within my first 9 months in office, I will have all of our troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq. That was a broken promise. He say, I will create millions of jobs across the country, and that will be done within my first year, where I will have a jobs program. He came in his second year in office, and he said, well, you know, all the shovel-ready jobs, I guess they weren't really shovel-ready. So the thing is, when I look at the Democrats and the Republicans, and I look at the politics from one party to another, I have to ask myself, where are any dissimilarities between the two parties? Professor?
Well, I mean, of course, the Democrats disappoint us all the time, but compared to the Republicans, they've done a lot more. But, of course, they've been held back by the fact that the Republicans having control of the Congress for so many years. You know, the divided government is what causes the problem. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson could accomplish their goals when they had a very widespread Democratic majority in their time.
One at a time, please.
What about the first 4 years of Obama's administration? I believe the Democrats had control.
The first two years, but they didn't have a filibuster-proof Senate.
Well, the first 2 years.
That's the problem. So, and that filibuster is something I wish could be wiped out. I think it's a terrible thing. Everything should be 51 votes, in my opinion. Just like in the House, you need a majority of 218, but it isn't. So the Senate itself is a big problem.
Excuse me, though. Wait a minute. It was not a smooth transition from Bush to Obama. We were going through the greatest financial crisis we had gone through.
Are we in the same wars?
Are we in the same war?
Iraq war.
Are we still in Guantanamo?
We're not in Iraq. That's what
we still. We are in Iraq. I beg to differ. We are in Iraq, and we're sending more troops on the ground. Just turn on your computer.
We are in Afghanistan, and it's just spring again. It's beginning again, and we need to get out of there. We need to get out of all of the damn military operations. We really do.
Yes.
But from the catbird seat, from the White House, how do you go about doing that without losing, you know, all the ground starting to shift away? I mean, you're going to consider the complete picture there of the person walking into the job. It's, you know, he promised and he failed on several promises. He has created millions of jobs.
Yes, he has.
Not great ones, though.
Right.
No,
that's
not
the
great
key.
Ones, but
right,
I don't think Romney or McCain would have done any better. I think it would have been worse.
Right, I agree.
I agree. Well, that's what I say. Where are the dissimilarities?
Well, again,
the first 2 years, the Congress, the Republican minority, it was a minority, made it clear they were going to bottleneck in the Senate and they were going to refuse to cooperate on Guantanamo or anything else. If there had been cooperation, I think a lot more would have been accomplished. But yet, if you look at the Obama record, he has accomplished a great deal over the past 8 years, just not as much as we would have hoped, but a lot more than any president domestically, I'd argue, since Lyndon Johnson.
So we didn't get all the hope and change.
Well, that's rhetoric. I mean, that's every president does that. The hope and change is ruled by opposition. You know,
that's what I don't
if you had a Democratic Congress like
offering.
LBJ or FDR, he would have accomplished a lot
different.
More, though.
That's what I'm saying. We don't want what every president is doing. We don't want the same rhetoric. We want something different. And that's what we're hoping for from Bernie Sanders. Hoping. You know, that's what we were hoping for from Obama. But we didn't get the hope or the change.
Not to the extent that you wish, no.
Why do you think
sabotage.
Bernie Sanders is doing so well? Because people are hoping for the change.
Well, also on the Republican side, a lot of people like Donald Trump because he says he's going to change everything. So, but it's really not going to happen that way. I don't think Trump or Trump may be the nominee. Maybe he cannot win the country.
It's anti-establishmentarianism, and that's what's so appealing to people right now. They are fed up with gridlock and bullshit and the same old bullshit day in, day out, year in, year out. You know, they're tired of it.
You know, and that's a good point. You know, people are fed up, the people. But you can see the two corporate parties, they're not fed up. They're saying that we're going to still support the business as usual because that's what's happening with Bernie Sanders and Hillary.
It would seem to me the
because
clearest,
the party's saying
the
we're
clearest,
supporting our candidate.
The clearest message here that we can draw from all of this, and it's not an easy thing to do, and it's something we've got to dedicate ourselves all to doing, we have got to, without any doubt, without any further delay, we have got to get this ungodly corporate money out of politics, period. No,
well, how are you going to do that?
It's got to go.
What we need is a Democratic president and a new Supreme Court.
Thank you, Professor Ron. That's exactly. Go ahead. Say that again.
The Supreme Court, the crucial issue. There's a lot of complaints and problems in foreign and domestic policy, but a Democratic president, either one of them, will bring about a majority Supreme Court that is liberal for the first time since 1972 when the Republicans gained the majority of the court and have held it for 44 years and have made terrible decisions. And now there is a chance that there will be a big change once the court is changed. That is the crucial issue of the election more than anything
else.
It
sure is. It sure is. Good point, Professor.
I'd
like to make a point that's coming from David, which is a good one. He says Obama has accomplished a lot, but he's also he also has the Middle East on fire, and he's never
and Asia.
Excuse me, and never has personal rights been so minimized so much.
Well,
allow me to interject here real quick on the Middle East. Daddy Bush told his son W. Do not go in after Saddam Hussein. You destabilize that. You destabilize the whole region.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, as of last year, Daddy Bush has written a book saying, yeah, he was misled. Now, but it's still my son's fault because, bottom line, the buck stopped with him. But he got bad information. He got weapons of mass destruction.
From Cheney,
bull crap,
from Rumsfeld.
By Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld. You know,
So this was what Daddy Bush predicted back in 2000, 2001, said, do not go back into Iraq. And really, we all know that Halliburton thought they had a chance to grab those Iraqi oil wells. I heard myself when I was doing cryptic communication. The company was called Page One Science there in Old Town Alexandria, just not too far from the Pentagon.
Yep.
They thought they were going to get a hold of those oil wells. It didn't pan out, and it set the whole damn Middle East on fire. That was Bush's legacy, and that's what Obama inherited.
Yep.
You know,
okay,
the,
gentlemen, back to you.
I think.
Well, I don't really think Obama. You know, he can for a while. Obviously, he was saying he inherited all this mess, but you know, in 8 years, it gives you plenty of time to make a change,
to extricate yourself.
You know,
if you had a Republican,
and in 8 years,
the Republicans
are
in the majority,
change.
But they're in the majority. That makes it very difficult to do anything.
Yeah. Good point.
Listen, before I get stepped on again, I'm going back to that mic. Before I get stepped on again here, let me just add, I tell you guys, I really wish we could just follow the indigenous tribal village template. I really do. And here's the
dream
point.
On.
We are such a huge population, and that's one of the daunting things. We have huge political parties in affiliation, and it's an organizational hierarchy that keeps them going, too, and there's corruption in every organization that's just made.
Yep. That's
and
the root of all the evil.
Okay, so how do you find solutions to that? How do you make it whole? How do you make it right? How do you
mass movements like Occupy and keep it going, keep it going.
Well,
unite,
we know about
work hard.
We know about the Democrats and progressive movements.
Spear thrust forward, and he doesn't even mention them. I find that very rude myself. We have these movements. And all of these people who are looking to get something else going. And Bernie has put the conversation into the left side of the court very much so. I think that's correct. I just wonder, though, at pulling back the reins here, and Stuart makes very good points. He says, you know, Obama had a lot of great ideas and made promises. They all do. And they come in, and what happens? Well, one of the things that has to happen, and this is where that organizational structure comes into play, is bringing in the people who are going to support you from your party, which doesn't always happen, but usually can, and changing the dynamic of the Congress, because perhaps thinking about presidents isn't where we should be at. Perhaps what we're supposed to be thinking about is changing the face of Congress.
And change the face of the state legislatures. You've got to undo
exactly.
the damage that the corporate parties have inflicted on this country for many, many, many generations. We've got to uproot all that shit. And that's a key thing. That's a great point.
I want to mention the Koch brothers have really messed up North Carolina. Look what they've done in North Carolina in the last few years. Made a disgraceful state the way it's been, you know, the way the legislature has been passing horrible laws and really, you know, really making things terrible. North Carolina has really become very backward, and it's because the Koch brothers have gotten involved in education and everything, you know.
Yep.
I want to ask something of the panel here because, you know, obviously – We can't ignore the fact that Bernie Sanders is doing extremely well, and he is reaching out to millions of Americans. I mean, I can't even turn on my computer without seeing Bernie Sanders plastered all over the place.
He's doing a great job in that regard.
I want to ask what are the millions of millennials that are out there, and obviously now we know that they have eclipsed. The baby boomers is approximately 76 million millennials that are out there, and that's a very powerful voting force. What are the chances, and I'll ask this to the professor also and the entire panel, that Bernie Sanders could possibly look at, because I don't believe he's going to win the nomination, but run as a vice presidential candidate with Hillary Clinton to be a voice for the millions of people that have already supported him.
I say hear, hear on that one. Take the two, team them up, and go after it. Make the difference.
Yeah, I don't think it would happen.
Like said,
I'd like to see it.
I don't think it's
going to
happen either because, first of all, you know, it's all about people being seniors, having a person over 70, 69 plus, and having another one 75. I don't think it's a very good match.
Yeah, the reason why I mention that is because if I go back to the New Deal and the Franklin Roosevelt administration, I mean, he had Henry Wallace. It was a very strong progressive.
Great man.
People throughout the country supported his politics. He made a difference in American politics for well over 12 years.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, here,
then he was dropped from the ticket in 44.
Then he was dropped from the ticket.
Sabotaged by the Democratic
establishment. But by even being the second person there, he made a difference as a progressive. I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders is the type of progressive that I look at, but obviously there are tens of millions of people that disagree with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is at least it would be a voice there for the millions of people that are supporting him. And if we want to talk about hope, it would give people some hope like they had the hope in Obama.
It would, yeah.
Well, what is your opinion about that? I'm asking anyone on the panel, including the professor.
Can I just jump in for a second here?
Sure, please, Gwen.
I think that, yeah, the millennial population in this country is very large. I know it's 70-something million.
76.
Okay, I take your word. It's a very small percentage of them that are involved in the politic right now. But
it's a growing amount, and that's what we got to keep going.
Right.
But here's the thing. I really would go back to this, too, and I think it's important that we remember this. You know, it takes less than 1% to make a huge change happen, and I think that Mr. Sanders is proving that extremely well right now. I really do. I would, and David is saying, you're the narrator, tell him to shut up, and I'm going to say this. I wouldn't like to get more than anyone. Men talking. But, gentlemen, because you all put very good things on the table. I think I do too. And the question comes up, you know, how do you change that is going to take war off the table and put money back into the people and the country?
Well, I love that.
I think that one of the first ways we have to do it is make sure that the people in Congress, and as Jack so rightly points out, locally in the state houses, are people that we feel good about who they are and what they have to say.
Yep.
And it's an ignorance of how politics work in this country that is at fault here in many ways, too, I think. I'm just saying that, and Stuart, I hope you're going to come back and sit with us while this election's running, and the same with you.
Oh, I definitely will.
Great.
But you know, Gwen, that was a very good point that you brought up, where you were saying about war on the table. They talk about the Cold War, and now we're moving toward a hot war, and you look at this president. When you say war, I mean, we had to think of the ultimate going into war, nuclear weapons. And here you have a president that got the Nobel Peace Prize, has now committed to upgrading the nuclear arsenal of this country by $1 trillion over the next decade. $1 trillion.
When you talk about
eradicating student debt, eradicating student debt, that's a very good start when you look at over the next 10 to 15 years. If we have that commitment to war, why can't we have that commitment to our future leadership, our sons and daughters, our children in this country? What was that?
Everything.
To the children, because it's about the next 7 generations. It's not about us. It's about the next 7 generations. Guys, we've got like 6 minutes. So Ronald Professor,
yes.
I hope you will come back through this election and join us again, too, and I hope
yes.
to get Crowell
yes.
ordained.
Very happy to do it as many times as you wish, yes.
Yes.
And Stuart, thank you so much for coming on and putting your ideas on the table and your
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And Jack, you got to talk more, buddy.
Oh, no. I blab way too much. I'm letting you guys do it this week. God almighty. I monopolized it last week, so I'm taking it easy. But you know I'm there. I support progressives across the board. So,
Well, that's good to hear.
Very, very engaging today. I really like all the guests we have, and I want to hear more from Wayne. That's the guy we got to hear from.
Yeah, Wayne, really. Give us the last call here. What's the last thought?
Go ahead, Jack.
Well, the last thought is that politics is always in flux. There is a great progressive movement that is potentially on the horizon involving millennials, and I urge everybody who's ever thought of even attending a city council meeting, for God's sakes, get off your dead ass and go do it. Elizabeth Goldfield is a very great millennial activist who's very active. She is at Democracy Awakening in D.C. this past week. She's going to be reporting on it. She's already released one report. You know, she has it down. Man, she's on top of it all, and she's not weird. She's on top of it. She knows her stuff. Everybody can do that. You've got to do that. It's our future. It's our children's and grandchildren's and great-grandchildren's future. We can't neglect this anymore. We can't immerse ourselves in corporate bullshit. We can't be swayed away by crappy corporate dreams that are they're just illogical to begin with. We have got to grab the bull by the horns, and we got to run with it. And we can't just sit and go bowling instead or watching sitcoms on TV. We've got to get off our dead asses and do it. So be active, everybody. Go to your damn city council meeting. Get your feet wet. Find out what's going on. You'll be surprised at what you're going to pick up. And you know what? Pretty soon you're going to be having a good voice, and people will be listening to you, and you'll have an impact. You won't have it by sitting and bitching at the TV.
Jack,
and I guess I'd like to add to that by saying, Gwen, go ahead.
Just one second. I got to tell you, Jack, uh-huh. Now you know, we had Ryan here on with me and how I go to the council meetings and how now I'm labeled the neighborhood anarchist because of my support.
Well, good for you.
Well, they know who you are, and you are going to peel somebody away for them.
Well,
I was going to say, my closing statement I'd like to say is my daughters are of the millennium generation. I have coworkers, very good friends here in Columbus. You know, they're in their mid-30s. And basically I'm saying the reins are in your hands. It's mm-hmm. the baby boomers have and will, generously, reins of leadership and decision-making to this new voice coming up.
Right.
And that's important.
Yeah, we can't shut them out.
It's now that, right, the millennials, which we've made this statement here from the two guests we've had, it's the millennium's time.
Yep.
And we're
asking everybody to join us and keep pushing forward. That is the key. You've got to keep pushing forward and not look backward the way the conservatives and the reactionaries want us to do. Those guys are nuts. They have nothing to stand on. We have a lot to stand on and a lot to push for, so we got to keep it going.
I want to thank you all for joining Wayne and Jack and I today.
Yes.
Hope you will return with us through this election season. And,
yes, I'm available.
Just let me know when you need me.
And I want to remind everybody to go on over to Air Martaveo. Listen to Stuart on Before Progress Towards Democracy. Stuart, what's the name of your show again?
It's Left Agenda with Stuart Alexander, and it comes on every Monday at 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock Eastern, and Campaign 2016 with Stuart Alexander. I would love to have the professor on sometime. That would be very exciting.
That would be very nice. I'd be very happy to be on.
I'd get you two together. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks again.
Thanks so much.
Man.
Okay,
thank you,
have
Wayne.
A good day.
Thank you, fellas. Keep up the good work, everybody. Keep pushing
thank
forward.
You.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
And that's our show. Tune in next Sunday. We'll be here with you. Thank you for listening. This has been The Sunday Show. I'm here. Be monsters.